This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Let's see. Today on the radio show, we got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock, and we got Fish on Friday on Tuesday. Our man in Washington, D.C., Charles Fishman, is going to join us in the second hour because it is, in fact, Tuesday. No, Jeffrey. George is back with us today. I thought we, you know what? It was a little bit of an adjustment, just like Kevin Eastlow is the new coach. You know, it's a little bit of an adjustment.
Work in progress.
When we were doing phones, you know, we didn't quite know how to do that, like whatever, but we're working through it. I appreciate George. Next man up mentality that we have here on the show yesterday. I went down to Claiborne Temple, and they asked me to do a column on that at the Daily Memphian. And I'll be honest, I don't feel particularly equipped to write about Claiborne Temple and what it has meant to this community. I'm aware of the history, certainly. I've been there a number of times. And honestly, the truth is that when you walk in the media entrance at FedEx Forum, you walk past Claiborne Temple every single time. So there it is, this gorgeous reminder of a moment in, and particularly a moment, I mean, it's been here for more than 100 years, but the moment that people remember is 1968, when for 65 days, and it's funny, Wikipedia says 64 days, but I was talking to Emily Yellen, who is an author who's written extensively about the civil rights movement. She counts it as 65 days. Some of this stuff is Jeffrey, the old habits. When you do days between, do you count the days on both end? You know, the days between, but then it's also, it turns out 68 was a leap year too. So like it becomes complicated. It was 65 days though. The sanitation workers showed up and they put on their I Am a Man, which is just the most, it's the simplest statement asking for a recognition of your fundamental humanity. I am a man. And they put on those and carried those signs and they walked the streets. And the truth of the matter is, we can look back. It's not unlike how we look back at MLK now with this sort of gauzy sentimentality. But at the time, not popular, not popular. Emily told me that for those 65 days, the CA never did a story on the life of the sanitation workers. Like never, you know, that wasn't totally different, by the way, than the CA would do it now, of course. But anyway, so I went down there yesterday because I felt wildly ill-equipped to write about this sort of civic tragedy that was the burning of Claiborne Temple. And I just stayed there and talked to people as they showed up to pay their respects. And a good number of the people were crying, who may or may not have any particular connection to the place. But a good number, there was a 21-year-old woman who lived in the neighborhood who I talked with. And she was just sobbing. Russ Wiginton, who is the president of Civil Rights Museum, he said, this place was the quintessential symbol of a theme we try to live out every day at the museum, which is that the civil rights movement was really about ordinary people doing extraordinary things. Here's Yellen on those same people. These were men and women, I include the wives, she wrote, who were for the most part born on cotton plantations in Mississippi, West Tennessee, and East Arkansas. They were the first generation to get away from the cotton plantations to move to Memphis in the promise of a better life. And when they got here, they were treated similarly to how they were treated as sharecroppers. So for them to band together and form a union was a heroic act of asking the city and this country to live up to its original ideals. And that, I guess, in the end, Claiborne Temple was at a time when, let's be honest, some folks are trying to whitewash history. It's kind of remarkable. You're not supposed to talk about this stuff or teach this stuff or whatever. But it wasn't so long ago. It was certainly during my lifetime. And Claiborne Temple was a reminder of that heroism and a sort of reproach to those who would, you know, try to deny those aspects of American history. And then the other thing that I think, and so to see it gone really is painful. And then the other thing that I think makes it painful is that it just felt like another thing, you know, and it felt like a thing. Like there was, and I gather that the effort to reclaim and renovate Claiborne Temple has had fits and starts over the years and has not been entirely smooth, but folks have stuck with it. And just a year ago, they dedicated some new stained glass, beautiful stained glass windows, and progress was being made. And this was something that was hopeful and good. And then to see it burned, I just think you wake up on a Monday. It just, you know, I thought it was really painful. It was, you know, and so it was a mournful scene yesterday. Channel 5 was broadcasting a live from the scene and had lots of folks they were bringing in to talk about it. Joe Birch is so good on this stuff because he has obviously lived here and grown up here and understands it as well as anyone. So I appreciated his presence there, sort of shepherding the newscast through that. But it was an emotional moment, and it's an emotional time, I think. And they talk about how they're going to, it's funny, you just don't know whether this, you should put much stock in this or not. Resilient city, we're going to rise, whatever. The mayor came down, and Mayor Paul Young said that they were going to work with architects and planners to see what elements of the building can be saved. And by that, I can't imagine. I mean, you can see right through the building now. It's one of the things Russ Wigginton said. When you drive past it now, you can see through it. That's how gutted it is. The tower. Like, when you say elements, I mean, the Chick-fil-A on Union, I guess, has elements of, right? Have you been to the Chick-fil-A, the church of the Chick-fil-A there on Union?
I've driven past.
You've never been? You've never actually been to the... No. And it will be obviously more respectful than a Chick-fil-A. I'm not at 100%. All equating. The I Am a Man statue is still there, the sculpture and the wall, whatever. And obviously it will always be a place. And the truth of the matter is that the building matters less than the spirit, of course. But anyway, that's how I spent my afternoon. You can read about that over at the Daily. Memphian Bill Dries also did a piece on the fire, which you can read at the Daily Memphian. There, by the way, also, by the way, speaking of iconic Memphis structures, Oak Court Mall is going to be knocked down. We got that news as well, which we may touch on. I think we're going to play Believe It or Not in the next segment. We may touch on that as well in the next segment. So, all right, I did today, George, what I thought we'd do is you would help me interpret a couple of quotes.
Okay.
And Chris Harrington's piece at the Daily Memphian, it takes a bunch of quotes from Media Day, and because a lot is said, not Media Day, a breakup, you know, run to the bus,
exit interview
yeah. day. Yeah. Thank you. There's a lot of stuff said, and it's hard to digest it all at once. So what Chris did is he went back and he picked out a bunch of quotes, and we'll talk to Chris about that when it is his time here, straight up at 10 o'clock, and we'll even talk about some of the quotes he highlighted. But I do think, as we try to read between the lines of various quotes, we have to start with the one from Ja yesterday. Be careful what you wish for. George, what does that mean? Be careful what you wish for. First, do you like the exercise of interpreting Ja quotes? If someday he retires, having given Memphis 3 or 4 championships, and we no longer are in the business of interpreting jaw quotes. Will that be a happy day, or will you miss the exercise of trying to guess the mood of Ja from his social media posts?
I think it'll be a little bit, it'll be a little sad.
No, it won't be sad. I hate this.
You hate doing it?
This is ridiculous.
In a way.
It's ridiculous that we have to be sitting here and that so much matters. Is he happy? Is he not happy?
Okay,
oh,
no, that part,
does
no, that's
he want
fair.
Out? Does he? No, no, no. I don't need this at all. But I'm either even a bigger challenge. Give me several different interpretations of what be careful what you wish for could mean.
In the case for Ja Morant, it could mean a ton of things. I mean, the thing that he posted not 2 hours before was all about his shoes. These could be, you know, he could be asked or talking about different colorways for the Ja 3.
Oh, come on. You're telling me.
No, it's about,
we're coming up with alternate theories. So that one would be, he would be telling people, you may have been wishing for this particular colorway.
Just wait till you see what
just
we have.
Just wait till you see what we have coming.
Yeah.
I see. How about, I'll give you a positive one. This is more, with all due respect, better than your ridiculous effort to try to stretch this into something other than what we all think it is.
Yeah.
How about he's examining Dame Lillard's injury.
Ooh.
He realizes that Dame wanted out of Portland. He wanted out of Portland. He goes to Portland. Doesn't work out. He gets an Achilles injury. Devastating, by the way. He's appeared gone all next year. Yeah. And what he is saying to the world and to himself, be careful what you wish for.
Because sometimes it might not work out.
Because sometimes the grass may not be greener.
That's a good one.
It's not true, but that would fit, right?
And
that would be a hopeful one from the Grizzlies' perspective.
Because that's him saying, you know what? It might not be so good if something were to happen or if I were not to be here.
Maybe he's commenting on Shedeur Sanders.
There was plenty of, Twitter activity from him in that vein over the weekend. Very well could
Everyone else commented on Shedeur Sanders. I don't know what be careful what you wish for, because what did Shedeur Sanders wish for? I don't think be careful what you wish for probably fits that one as well. Do you have any other more be careful what you wish for? How about maybe he was thinking about Isalo. He's like,
that was one of my thoughts.
You think you want to be an NBA coach? Look at how this turned out. Be careful what you wish for.
Also could be the opposite. It could be, look what we already have in the building. You know, a lot of us seem to like Isalo. If we bring someone else in, hey, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Oh, I see. He's telling y'all, everyone who wants a coach other than Isalo,
hey, look what
be careful what you wish for, because it may not be better than Isalo.
Could be.
Okay. We don't believe those are any of those are what he means, though, right?
Probably not.
Isn't the logical interpretation, Ja is deeply aware of anyone who criticizes him. Way back when, before anyone was criticizing him, as you may recall, he singled out that one guy on Twitter who criticized him, and he thanked that person. And so, like, Ja has, like a lot of us do, extreme sensitivity to criticism. So, although I believe that most Memphians love Ja, want him to stay, might be a little weary of some of his antics, yes, but fundamentally would be on the side of they want Ja to remain a Grizz. Don't you think that's true of most Grizzlies fans?
Yes, I think that's
overwhelmingly.
More so than not. Certainly more so than not.
Okay. But that's not what Ja sees. Ja sees the people who are like, get the hell out of here, trade him, right?
Isn't that what a lot of us see, though? Like,
yes, of course.
We see good things and bad things, but the bad things are the ones that stand out.
There's no question that if you write me an email saying I am the best thing ever, first of all, thanks.
We appreciate it.
Second of all, I'll get around to answering it and sending you an email back expressing my gratitude. But if you send me an email saying I'm a moron and that I was wrong about whatever, you can list the number of things I was wrong about, I will answer that one instantly. So, yes, I agree with you completely. I'm not saying whatever. But so what he's saying is, be careful what you wish. He is telling those members of the Grizzlies fan base who wanted him traded to be careful what you wish for, because I may ask to be traded. Isn't that what this is? Isn't that the obvious thing? Isn't that what this has to be?
That's what it my immediate thought was, okay, this is, he's clearly seeing what people are saying about potentially not just trading Ja Morant, but potentially breaking up the big three. I mean, because it hasn't only been,
okay, but
it needs to be Ja, you know.
But there's two ways to interpret this. One is that he's just simply warning people that, listen, if this is the way this goes, whether it's trading me or breaking up the big three,
mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it as breaking up the big three. I thought it was more just personal for Ja. But could be that he's just saying, hey, be careful. It's not always going to be so great. There's the next step is to say that he's really saying, be careful what you wish for, because I may now act on what you're wishing for and ask to be dealt. You don't think that could be part of be careful what you wish for? It's not just a general warning. Hey, if they break up the big three, it may not work out so well.
It could be direct.
You better stop asking that, saying that I could be traded, because I could walk in there and ask to be traded. Those are different things. One is general, and one is like, this is going to motivate me to do something to get the hell out of here. Which is more likely that it is? The first variation of that or the second?
After, which again, and we talked about this yesterday.
We have no idea. We're spitballing, as Chris Harrington described it yesterday.
Well, I mean, that's kind of where
that's
I'm going.
That's what we're doing, right? We're this joyful exercise of interpreting the brain of Ja Morant.
We talked about this yesterday. What they're saying to us and what the media is getting might not be exactly what's going on behind the scenes. But from everything we heard from Ja Morant, and I know we're going to talk with Chris about some of his quotes probably from the exit interviews, it certainly didn't seem like he was going to crutch his way into Zach Kleiman's office and demand a move out of Memphis.
No, but you never know.
But we don't know.
So there was that one. And I don't think if we're saying, was that post quote/quote good or bad? I'd say more bad than good, right? More ominous than promising.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say that? More ominous than promising. Yeah.
For sure.
Okay. Here's another quote I need you to help me with. And this is taken from Chris's piece today. Zach Kleiman. I wish we could snap our fingers and have some gritty veteran wing. We're not one gritty veteran wing away from winning a championship. Okay, so that's the quote. What? It's not just what he means. I think what he means is pretty obvious. What he means is,
we're not one piece away.
We're not one piece away.
Yeah.
If we go get one piece, that will not...
That won't fix all of our issues.
That will not have us beat Oklahoma City and beat the Celtics. And I think we can all agree that's true, right?
Yeah, 100%. Right.
But what are the implications of that? Like, and not only that, it's not just what are the implications of that. What are the implications of that from his perspective? What do you think, if you are saying we are not one gritty veteran away, what does that mean? What more are you saying? So, for example, let me give you some interpretations of what that could be saying. Could be saying, we are not one gritty veteran away. We need a big overhaul, man. We need to do more than that. We are not one gritty veteran away. We got to fundamentally shake up this core. Because if I could snap my fingers and get a bit, that's one thing, and that would be great. But I can't. And if I could, it's not enough. And so I got to do some dramatic excavation and reconstruction over this offseason. That is one interpretation. Here's another interpretation, though, that I think is just as valid. Everyone was criticizing me for not getting the veteran. We're not one freaking veteran away. That's not what we're doing. You think we could have gotten one veteran and been better than these teams? We're not one veteran away. So what we need to do is grow this team, water it, let Zach Edey get better, let Jalen Wells get better, And so stop asking me to go get the gritty veteran who you think it's going to put us over the top, because that's not going to do it. We have to have internal growth here. We're going to keep this group together, and you're going to see Jalen Wells get better, and you're going to see Zach Edey get better, and you're going to see Scottie Pippen get better. And it's not about getting one veteran. That's not where we are. We're still growing as a group. Aren't those equally valid interpretations of, I mean, we're not one gritty veteran away means what it means. It's, and I think it's a correct assessment. But is he saying that to indicate that he needs to do a hell of a lot more than one veteran? Or is he saying it to fundamentally absolve himself from going to get one gritty veteran? Aren't those equally valid interpretations?
Yes. And like for me, the one that I am more inclined to, I don't want to say believe, is probably the first, because that was my first takeaway from that quote was, no, you know what? You're right. We are one piece away, or we're more than one piece away, excuse me. We have some other changes that need to be made. But in context of what we listened to yesterday and how we analyze that, there might be a little bit more credence to that second point or that second interpretation. I mean,
well, it's funny.
We
when
talked
I first
about how defensive
quote,
he was.
I thought it meant the second. I thought because what we saw in that in Kleiman's statements were, we saw a lot of defensiveness. And again,
yes.
I understandably, I just told you that I answer the critical emails faster. Like, I'm defensive too. So, but we saw him answer a question about, do you like the core, with an answer about, about
five, 6 minutes
about all the dogs that they have. And what was the other element that he went into? It was, you know, he talked
for like 2 minutes, yeah, about Jaw specifically.
So he was talking, so he was defensive on a whole lot of stuff. So maybe this is just, he knows that everyone has said you should have gone to get one veteran. Maybe it was just reflexive defensiveness of the sort that we saw from him. So I don't really, I honestly don't know. To me, the almost the biggest question to come out of that press conference was, what does that quote mean? And if it means we have to do some serious excavation, well, that'll make for an interesting summer. I my fundamental take, and I was listening to, you know, I listened to a lot of the shows yesterday and reflected on all of this. And again, we'll talk more about it with Chris when he joins us at 10 o'clock. I have a couple of, I fundamentally believe, I've said this before, that fan bases, when their team gets eliminated, unless it's at the stage of just surprising, plucky new growth, like the Pistons this year, right?
Yeah.
For example, or the Commanders this year, whatever. When your team gets eliminated, you hate your team. Like you just, there is an outpouring of hate towards your team. If it's been trying for a while, and you will see this, you know who hates their team today? Justifiably, Miami fans, right?
The Heat, yes.
Yeah, they hate that team. Like a week ago, they probably loved the team or whatever. They were finding the things to like about the team. I saw this most recently with the Memphis Tiger basketball team, which people love that team. And then as soon as they lost in the NCAA tournament, I couldn't freaking believe it. There was Fire Penny stuff. A lot of it. There was a lot of it. Fire Penny stuff. And I'm like, what in the world? And it's this, you deal with the pain in different ways. And about half the people out there, when their team loses, hate their team. And so I saw a lot of that, and I've seen a lot of that around the Grizzlies, and, you know, about the attitude towards Ja, or the attitude towards the big three, or the attitude towards Jaren, or whatever. Although I will say this, I thought, given that I do think that is true, generally speaking, I thought when we opened up the phones, people were actually pretty thoughtful about what could happen in the future. And I do fundamentally believe, and a lot of you people may disagree with this, that there is a strong argument. If you could isolate, if you could divorce this situation from all the external factors, from the whatever internal chemistry issues there are, from the financial challenges, from some of the, I think, disconnect between the city and the team in terms of just how much they like each other and stuff. Like, if you could just taken as a laboratory experiment in terms of building a team, I think there's a strong argument for bringing this team back. Largely as it is. Because, yeah, you got Ja, you got Jaren, you got Dez, and you can argue all you want that you wish they would be better. I heard another radio host saying, this isn't the big three. You know who's the big three? Like, look at the Celtics. Have you watched the Celtics? There's a documentary series out there about the Celtics, the Garnett Celtics, right? And that Garnett, Pearson, and Ray Allen, that was a big three. Well, sure, like, they're not walking through that door. Like, that's great. I can name three better basketball players than Ja, Jez, and Ja, Dez, and Jaren. I just don't see him in Memphis right now. And I don't see a way of turning the big three that Memphis has into a better big three. I don't see, maybe there are trades out there, and we'll discuss them over the course of the summer. I don't see trades of Ja, Jaren, or Dez that will make the team better. Maybe they exist, and that would be great if they did. But I don't speak in abstractions. Let's just break it up. Do it if there's a team better. So you got those three very good players, and then you've got Jalen, who's going to get better, and you got Zach Edey, who's going to get better, and you got Scottie Pippen, who you've discovered, and then you do a little bit whatever around the margins. You get a real backup point guard. Because Scottie Pippen is not that. He's not a ball, right? Whatever.
No, he's a two by
and whatever.
Trade.
You get some glass-eating, rebounding dude. And then you run it back. I think it's a pretty good team. I think it's a 50-win team. The problem is that you got all the other stuff. It doesn't exist in isolation. And so you have the financial challenges that will present. What does Jaren want? Chris said the spread was between $240 and $350 million. Those are different, very different numbers, $240 and $350 million. So that could force their hand on Jaren. What does Ja want? He's out there tweeting, be careful what you wish for. So what the hell does that mean? What does he want? And then do you have to literally just to create and sustain interest in this team, in this city, do you have to do something to... Like, there's that part of it. So there's all kinds of other things that I think will ultimately dictate what happens here. And we can't actually, sadly, look at it just in the abstract. What is going to make this team better? Did you finally conclude? Okay, let's get our predictions in, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back. I want to play Believe It or Not. Will Isolo be the coach? And will the big three, and yes, I'm going to still call them that because you'll know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Will they all be back? Predictions.
Predictions. I think, so we did a similar exercise yesterday afternoon with myself, Jeffrey, and Coach Hurd about the coaching
search. How's Jeffrey's vacation going?
Well, it sounds like it's going pretty well. I mean, obviously, limited chatter from him, which I think is a good sign. On the coaching search, our big question mark, and this is also in the realm of we need to deal in absolutes, we need to deal in reality, not just go get the best coach, go bring in Eric Spoelstra or something like that. We have to look at who's
available. Everyone
says,
we need an Adoka guy, Adoka type.
Well,
okay,
Adoka,
who is it besides Adoka? Like, what does that mean? We need that type. You need that type.
But who is
it's
that?
He's not a type. He's an individual. Right, exactly. Who is that?
Because the question mark was...
All right, but I need a prediction.
I think Isolo is going to be the coach.
Okay.
And on the other hand, I don't necessarily think the big three is going to be... In
you don't get to use the word necessarily. You got to vote yes or no.
In that case, I'm going to vote no. The big three is not going to be back, but Isolo is.
And what's your level of conviction out of a 10, this is a, take it to the bank, stone cold lock. And one is, I got no idea. You literally, I'm just flipping a coin here that with each of those. What's your level of confidence?
Each of those, big three being back, closer to this is a coin flip. So one or a two on that scale. The coaching, a little bit more conviction, say 70-30. So
yeah, I think I'm with you, actually. I think Isola will be back, and largely because of the quotes. And another thing that Chris noted was that, again, we're interpreting, this is today the day we're interpreting quotes. If you look at the players who Zach Kleiman particularly highlighted as success stories, the guys that he particularly mentioned as success stories, they were Edie, Morant, and Pippen, like the guys who he went sort of was strongest on, most reading the tea leaves, enthusiastic about. All of those guys did better once Isolo became the head coach, right? Pippen did. He was out in the starting lineup. We had the playoff series that he had. Morant certainly did. And Edie certainly did. And those are guys who Kleiman went out of his way to identify as success stories. I think my Isolo will be back, and my level of conviction is 8. On the big three, I guess I'll say no. I guess I'll go back to that quote about we're not one scrappy power, gritty power forward, we're gritty forward away.
Yeah.
And say that probably means we have work to do. And therefore, even though I don't know what it will look like, but there are so many different variables. You can imagine them getting broken up because they decide Jaren's too expensive. You can imagine them getting broken up because, although that's a really hard one. You can imagine Ja with his tweet yesterday asking out. You can imagine that they might just decide we have to do something and decide Dez is the one to move. And so I would say I would predict that the big three will not be back, but my level of conviction is 1. I'm basically flipping a coin.
Yeah. And looking at that, because I was curious, you know, as you said, we need to look at who and how and actual realistic possibilities. I'm looking at it on, you know, just a list of the contracts. And while Dez is the most tradable in terms of contract, Kleiman didn't do himself any favors. He backloaded the contract big time so that when the cap goes up.
If therefore, it is tougher to match incoming salaries. Right, exactly.
Correct.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to play Believe It or Not on the other side. It is the Jeff Calkins Show. We got a busy second hour because we got Fishman and we got Harrington. We'll do that as well. Before that, let me tell you that if you are thinking of getting a new financial institution, and maybe it's because you're just irritated at being nickeled and dimed by your current financial institution, or maybe it's because current financial institution has changed names 3 times, or maybe it's because you're getting fees that you don't want to get, extra fees you don't want to get hit with, or maybe any number of reasons. If you want fabulous technology, fabulous service, I would suggest Leaders Credit Union. Just go download the app. You'll see for yourself. It's tremendous. They do have a Bartlett location and a brand new location in Arlington. But we are customers, members. It's members because it's a credit union. And so they pour they don't have stockholders or whatever else. They pour every dollar back into better technology, better service, and better products, better rates. It's Leaders Credit Union. To learn more, leaderscu.com/ESPN. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. If you're thinking about buying a diamond ring, first of all, congratulations. Second of all, maybe you're a little nervous about it. You shouldn't be. Just get yourself to Robert Irwin Jewelers, and they will walk you through it. Way back when I got engaged in 92, 93, something like that. Totally screwed it up. Someone hooked me up with a friend of a friend. Next thing I know, I got paid more for a diamond than it was worth, which I sadly learned when we had it appraised for insurance purposes. And she was shocked too. That's not how it's going to work at Robert Irwin Jewelers, because they're passionate about their diamonds. And among other things, they got the meant to be guarantee. 365-day, no questions asked, return policy with every custom-made engagement ring. Yeah, I'm going to return. It's going to be absolutely stunning. Jeffrey said what he really likes. It's like when he looks over, and it still happens today, and he sees Aaliyah looking at her ring. He just looks, and she didn't even notice whatever, and she's just looking at her ring. And it gives him this great sense that he didn't screw up. Like he really did it right. And they will walk you through it at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Again, you got the comfort of the meant-to-be guarantee, but they got fabulous financing. They got free ring sizing for life, free jewelry spa service for life. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers. They got locations. I go to the one. Look it up. You can look it up. RIJewelers.com. Just Google it. Robert Irwin Jewelers. But I go to the one that's right across from Novel on Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you. All right. Well, let's see if we can pull this off, George. Let's play Believe It or Not. Hey, good start. Yeah, what the Heat did last night completely gets the Grizzlies off the hook. Now you say whether you believe it or not.
Off the hook? I don't believe that.
No, of course it doesn't.
Did they get smacked around by 55 last night? Yes.
Yeah.
Does that get the Grizzlies off the hook?
Okay, but it does not.
It does not.
But let's be clear. If we are...
It's not good.
If we are comparing humiliations, and we are, what the Heat did last night was much worse. And I will tell you why it is much worse.
Please, because I agree.
It is much worse because the Grizzlies had, in fact, all kinds of reasons for why it happened the way it did, right? They were exhausted. They had just played their play-in game. They get in. Like, then you're going a Colossus, and you're going against a team that is beginning, first of all, and you're on the road.
It is a road game.
And it's a road game.
Yep.
And it is a team that is beginning this what is supposed to be their first ever championship run. So the place is absolutely electric. And listen, I thought the Grizzlies were—they let go of the rope in that game a little bit. I think they clearly did. Didn't you think they did? I don't think they're—
No.
They're not 51 point. They're not 51 points worse than Oklahoma City. It was part of a— But it was nothing, because what happened last night was home game, much worse.
They're in Miami.
They're in Miami in front of their own fans, and it was a run for the bus game. It was an elimination game. It was totally, like, the Grizzlies redeemed themselves. The Grizzlies, not totally, like they did for the, but they fought to the freaking bitter end. Like Saturday when, let's be honest, there were no fans went. Like, no one thought they were going to stand a chance. They fought to the bitter end. What the Heat did, that was totally disgraceful. And on top of all of that, so at home, run for the Cancun game, and they have T-shirts that say Heat Culture on them. Heat Culture. Now, mind you, Grizzlies have grit and grind. I can't say that game one at Oklahoma City was exactly grit and grind. So, whatever. But listen, when you're down, you know what you should do? You should look for someone who's lower than you in order to feel better about yourself. That's a fundamental lesson in life, people. Everyone else will say, when you're down, you should pick yourself up. Well, do that. But the other thing you should do is find someone in a worse situation or more disgraceful or who's more screwed up more than you have so you can feel better about yourself. And as a Memphis Grizzly guy, I have found the Miami Heat.
You want to know, because I just did a little quick math here.
Oh, well, that's good, because math isn't my strength, so I leave
it to
you.
Either. The average margin of victory for the Cavaliers in this series, 30 points.
Oh, my God.
30. We're talking back-to-back 40-plus point beatings.
It's also, by the way, it is
also... In Miami!
It is also, by the way, that's... Yeah. It is also a little reflective of what this season has been.
Yeah.
Like, this season has been, like, we've talked about how the Grizzlies can't beat good teams or whatever. That's been a theme. But if the truth of the matter is this season, well, first of all, there's more possessions in basketball now, so it's easier to win. But there have been more wins by greater disparities than ever before.
Yeah.
And it's partly because there feels like there is a greater divide between the truly elite teams and the rest. And then and we've seen it play out in the playoffs too. The truth of the matter is the play-in, I fundamentally believe, has been good for the NBA because it makes the end of the regular season more interesting as you're jockeying. Think of the jockeying to stay out of the play-in this year, right? But this year, at least, it has produced some dreck. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I'll more than agree with that, especially in the Eastern Conference, because, I mean, if we look at it, Miami made the playoffs, and they were 8 games under .500. They were 37-45 in the regular season. Those type of teams should not be making the playoffs anyway. But if you look in the Western Conference, I mean, we're talking a two-game spread from the 3 seed down to the 8 seed.
Right. Yeah.
How many teams did we have that had 50 wins?
Here, I'm going to throw this one. This is a bonus one. I wasn't expecting. The Memphis Grizzlies are in the same tier of teams as the Minnesota Timberwolves.
I believe that.
I've gotten some, like John came on here last week and said how the Grizzlies have been lapped by all of these other young teams. And I do think fundamentally they were once the promising young team in the West, and that is no longer true. I fundamentally agree with that. But the idea that you cannot acknowledge that the Grizzlies won the season series against Minnesota and finished, what, 2 games back of them? Like, yes, Minnesota is having a tremendous playoffs. They've got a great young superstar, all of that. But games and wins matter. The Grizzlies were 2 games behind Minnesota?
One game.
They were 1 freaking game behind Minnesota, and they beat them in the season series. The idea, again, this goes back to the when your team loses, you hate your team. The idea that you don't put them in the same tier of teams is crazy. They are in the same tier of teams. And that's why, they all played a complete season. 1 game separated them. How can you put them in a different tier? Because they're in the same tier as, now maybe, like, yeah, Jimmy Butler, maybe they're no longer in the same tier as that Golden State team once you added Jimmy Butler. But they're in the same tier with all those teams that they finished in a cluster with. They're in the same tier as Houston. They're in the same tier as the Lakers. They're in the same tier. Like, let's not overreact here. They played a season. They were within 1 or 2 games of all those. They're not in the same tier with Oklahoma City. But they are 100% in the same tier as the Minnesota Timberwolves.
We pick out these specific games from the regular season where we think, okay, maybe if they hadn't, you know, tinkered with the lineup as much as they did or didn't mess around and they could have won the Chicago games, the Brooklyn games. Cool. They win 2 more games.
Of course, that's true of Minnesota, too. Minnesota could come right back at you and find 2 or 3 games that they lost that they should have. But the point
is, you win those 2 games, you're the 3 seed or the 4 seed.
All right, moving on to the next one. You have some keen, fond memories of your days at the Oak Court Mall. I bring that up because the news came yesterday.
Yes.
That the Oak Court Mall is going to meet the Wrecking Ball. Dillard's, by the way, is a separate building owned by Dillard's and will still survive, evidently. They're going to knock it down. They're going to put a bunch of things there because malls are not the way of the world now. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way it goes. So, but yes, believe it or not, you have memories, fond memories of your time at the Oak Court Mall.
Me personally, believe it or not.
Not, no.
Me.
The answer is no. You do not. Had you ever set foot in the Oak Court Mall?
Oh, yeah. More than a handful of times. You know.
Have you eaten? Jeffrey used to go there to eat the food court like freaking every day.
No, I was about to say, part of that is, one, not a native of the area, and I do live in Mississippi.
You're in South Haven. So yeah. Just in the same way that I never go to Mississippi, you growing up never, I mean, there's the wall that borders the border. You have to get over the wall that separates Mississippi and Memphis, and so it's very hard to do. No, I did, though. Like, my eldest kid broke his femur when he was 8 months old. That's a story in and of itself. And so he couldn't even sit because he had such a big cast on. He couldn't even sit in a stroller. You just have to prop him up on the top of the stroller with some pillows and then a belt.
Yeah.
And I would take him, but I'd take him to the Oak Court Mall and I'd push him around the Oak Court Mall in the mornings and we'd go see, there was this fountain. It was this giant ball that was held up sort of suspended by water. and we'd go play in that, and we would then go to the food court and we'd get something. I mean, the Elkhart Mall was the place to be for a while in Memphis, and it I don't think there's any great sadness that it's gone away. I just think it is a new era. People don't shop in malls now. They shop in they shop online. They shop online. They shop on their phone, or they go to like shopping centers where you walk, like Saddle
Creek,
like
an open air,
like Saddle Creek or whatever else. Yeah, where you walk between. This is the best time ever if you're a Vol fan. I say that because the Vols are in town today at the Botanic Garden. The Vols are in town. The Orange Caravan is in town. And so if you're a Vol fan, this is the best time ever to be a Vol fan.
I believe it. Believe it. Basketball team is making great strides. The women's team is always good. Football team just came off a playoff appearance. And the baseball team just won a national title.
Okay, is it better, though? And I'm going to push back just a little. I think it's a great time to be a Vol fan. Is it really better than when Fulmer had those Vols like as the best team in the country every year, won a national championship? Like, I get it across the board. Across the board, it's never been better. Back then, every year, you had three freaking first-round draft picks who were Vols. Like, they were not quite Saban, Alabama, but they were like...
The closest thing
they
to
were,
it.
Like,
yeah.
they were one of the real... And if you're being honest with yourself as a Vol fan, I don't know the answer to this. Would you take a really, truly dominant run in football? Now, you lost to Florida a lot in those years, but you did win a national championship.
True.
Like, do you think these Vols are going to win a national championship? The answer is no.
No.
Mm-mm. They're probably not. Probably not. Not this year. Not next year. Not the next year. Not the next year. Probably not. Like, as good as they are, they're not Georgia. They're not Ohio State. Like, in the end, that's the other thing. The other thing that confuses me about this, let me ask you this. I'll run another one. This is the best time ever you went to Ole Miss. This is the best time ever to be an Ole Miss fan.
Believe it 100% because we're talking.
Really? Is it better than the 1960s when you won a national championships?
Well, that was.
I know. But I said ever to be an Ole Miss fan. Like, here's the other thing that's interesting to me. I do believe it's a great time to be an Ole Miss fan. You got basketball, football.
This is another one. It's the whole escape of it.
What's funny to me, if it's also, and if you've been out in the wilderness for a while, you know, and now you really are relevant as a football, as a real football brand.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me is how the money influx has really lifted Tennessee and has lifted Ole Miss, right? The money that's been poured in the SEC. But it seems like a crappy time to be a Mississippi State or an Arkansas fan, doesn't it? Just a crappy time. You wouldn't begin to say this was the best time ever to be. And yet they're also beneficiaries of the SEC money. What an awful time. You once, as an Arkansas fan, you were a power or at least a relevant top 15 football program once upon a time. And like now, really? Like, and Mississippi State? So why... If money is the answer to happiness in college sports, why isn't the same money creating happiness in Starkville and Fayetteville, such as it is in Ole Miss and in Oxford and in Knoxville?
That's an even better question because I don't look at Arkansas and Mississippi State as like they're not poor schools. They certainly have the funding, they have the money. Is it a willingness to, or a lack of willingness to spend it? Or is it just the certain programs we look at? Because if we look at Arkansas basketball, I mean.
They're pretty good. Right,
and
now
they just spent a ton of money.
And they just spent a ton of money.
So,
the other thing is how much of Ole Miss's happiness right now is tied to Kiffin in particular? In other words.
Oh, a ton, I'm sure.
Well, hell, both coaches, football and basketball. You're killing it right now. You have coaches who are like. Sort of out of your league a little, know what I mean?
100% out of our league.
I'd kick your coverage a little bit, right? I mean, there's a little bit like that. So, okay, last question. Arch Manning will be the number one pick in the NFL draft next year.
I'm going to go with not because I don't even know if he's going to enter the draft next year. I don't know.
Okay, if he enters the draft next year, he's going to be the number one pick in the draft next year.
That I believe.
I think I don't. Only because it's Arch Manning or the field. And he really hasn't done it. Yeah. He is, like, I just looked at mock drafts today, and he's number one in the mock draft.
I saw that
else.
As well, yeah.
In Dane Brugler's mock draft over at The Athletic, at least, and maybe the one on ESPN or wherever else you want. Even most mock drafts, this is considered the Arch Manning year. But usually when it's considered that year, it's because you've seen the guy play another, particularly a quarterback, you've seen the guy play another year. We really haven't.
Now we've gotten a handful
a taste.
Of, yeah, just a...
And he was good?
He was solid. Certainly more mobile than I think people expected.
But that's only just if you just assume he's as lead footed as his
uncles.
Yeah. So all right. We've got Chris Harrington coming up next. We'll talk to Chris, then Fish on Friday on Tuesday. It is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.